Good morning. It's good to see you this morning. It's good to be back. I missed last week, but I know you were blessed with Bryce preaching. No, he did a fantastic job. I know we continue to have a lot of people in and out for the summer. And so, as I've said many times through the summer, if you notice an absence, if you notice a blank place on your pew where normally there's a friend or someone you know, send them a text, let them know that they were missed. Let them know that their absence was noticed. Well, we're continuing in our study in the book of Proverbs, and I'm going to start with a couple of different Proverbs from chapter 15 and 20 as we begin. You'll see these on the screen behind me. A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. Avoiding a fight is a mark of honor. Only fools insist on quarreling. So I don't know how much you follow the news, but if you read a lot or if you watch the news a lot, then maybe you saw this story that popped up about a month ago on the news. A massive quarrel that broke out at a Little League game. Now, there's video of this, and if you've been here much, you know I like to show videos that illustrate a point in a sermon, but I'm not going to show this ridiculous video. There's no good that comes from that, but I do want to describe a little bit, read from the report about this fight. A baseball game between a group of seven-year-old kids degenerated into an all-out brawl, with parents throwing haymakers, others cowering for cover, and a woman even jumping on someone's back. The reason for the brawl: a parent didn't like the calls being made by a 13-year-old umpire. The fight began at Westgate Elementary School in Lakewood, Colorado, a suburb southwest of Denver, on Saturday at about noon, as 15 to 20 adults got into a violent tussle. The brawl was still ongoing as Lakewood police arrived at the scene. Police issued 4 citations for disorderly conduct, but said they're still searching for others involved in the fight, including one man who could be seen on the video repeatedly throwing sucker punches at people looking in the other direction. Brief recap. These are seven-year-olds. There are no big league scouts at this game. There are no college scholarships on the line at this game of seven-year-olds. This is not a decades-long rivalry where anger has built up over years and years going on at this game. The biggest issue that should occur at this game is what snack to pair with the Capri Sun at the end of the game. Do you go the healthy but unpopular route of orange wedges and apple slices, or do you risk frustrating a few parents with the less healthy but more popular route of individual bags of chips? That should be about the place where the conflict resides in this issue. But what leads to the fight? There is a 13-year-old umpire who's not calling the game the way some of the parents think they should call the game. This is a side note, but Little Leagues are having trouble getting people to umpire the games. I wonder why. I wonder why they need a 13-year-old to umpire the 7-year-olds' games in the first place. There are so many questions that a story like this surfaces. But if we were to take a step back and not just look at this story, but look at all the times in our own lives where anger builds up and it spills over. The reality is there's a lot of questions that we could be asking and a lot of questions that we should be asking. When our anger is bubbling up, when our anger is overflowing, there is a great opportunity to ask some self-reflection kinds of questions, to go a little deeper into the issue. Questions like, why am I really angry? Is the presenting issue the real source of my anger here? Is my anger really about this 13-year-old who's not calling balls and strikes the way I think he should? Or is something else going on in my heart and in my life where my emotions are in the red line long before I ever got here? Which brings up a related question. Is my anger misplaced? When I get home after a hard day's work and I kick the dog and I curse the spouse and I shout at the kid, my anger that's coming out to people right here not really be about these people right here? Might my anger be misplaced in this moment where I'm frustrated with my job, or I feel powerless in regard to my boss, or I've just had to take it all day from clients or people that I'm serving? And might I be misdirecting my anger toward the people that are closest and the easiest target? Or another question, is my anger proportional to the perceived injury or wrong? Maybe the 13-year-old umpire was calling a truly horrible game. But does that merit coming to blows with people? Is my anger proportional? Which, let me go ahead and be confessional, but also I'll be confessional for myself and for the rest of you. This same question is good for any sports fan, not just for 7-year-old Little League games. This has to do with our fandom for college games and pro games. I have to ask myself, if Paige doesn't ask for me, why are you so worked up after the Cowboys lost? And I could try to explain it, but the explanation, if I hear it come out of my mouth, it doesn't hold water. It's disproportional to what has just happened. Or other questions, how do I contribute? Or how am I contributing to this problem? Or what are my triggers in these situations so I can plan accordingly? Or is this a sign of an unresolved issue that needs to be addressed in my life? I read an article not all that long ago about a building boom that's been going on in Germany for a long time. And one of the things that construction crews continue to stumble across are all of these unexploded bombs from World War II. Now, they're all over Germany, especially from the last few months of the war, but the reality is they're all over Europe, as so many bombs were dropped and some of them didn't explode, or they're just waiting for that trigger to go off, like one farmer recently discovered when he woke up one morning and there was a massive crater in the middle of his field because there was a bomb he didn't even know was there that finally went off decades and decades later. And that can be any one of us when we've got unresolved issues in our lives, in our relationships, in the organizations and businesses that we're a part of, the kinds of things that should be dealt with in a healthy, upfront way. But we ignore them, and we bury them, and we hope they'll go away, but they just sit there waiting to explode. There's so many self-reflective questions that we can ask during times of anger, during times when we feel that our pulse is escalating. Now, all that being said, Proverbs doesn't spend most of its time with those kinds of questions. The majority of the time, when anger comes up in Proverbs, the concern is directional. And here's what I mean by that. The question it's asking is, what direction will you take when anger is in your heart and in the air? Do you make things better or do you make things worse? Do you escalate problems or do you de-escalate problems? Are you the kind of person that throws gasoline on the fire, or are you the kind of person that tries to help contain it and put it out? So I want you to listen to these descriptions, and you'll see them on the board behind me. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Mockers stir up a city, but the wise turn away anger. A hot-tempered person stirs up conflict, but the one who is patient calms a quarrel. It is to one's honor to avoid strife, but every fool is quick to quarrel. Like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears is someone who rushes into quarrel not their own. Now, I want you to notice for a minute the words of escalation and agitation. A harsh word stirs up anger. These are all the put-downs, all the patronizing speeches, all the personal ad hominem attacks instead of discussing an issue. This is the gossip and the slander that flows around. Mockers stir up a city. This is the kind of person that isn't really happy unless they're making other people unhappy and angry with them. I'm outraged. Are you outraged? You should be outraged because I'm outraged. And I'm going to keep talking until you get outraged because I'm outraged. These are the kind of people that can't move on and don't want others to move on either. And so they keep stirring up problems in a family or in a church or in a business. An issue that should have been moved past a week ago, or a month ago, or a year ago, but they have this ability and desire to keep dragging it back up. Not in a healthy way to deal with it, but in an unhealthy way. Just that grenade, that bomb into the middle of a conversation. We heard this part before in Proverbs 6:16, there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to Him. And the last one on the list, a person who stirs up conflict in the community. And here's another, the hot-tempered person and the person who are quick to quarrel is next in the discussion. And this is the type of person that takes everything personally and blows everything out of proportion. They're just looking to be offended. They're looking for a fight. They're looking to get upset. They're looking to complain and nitpick. And my personal favorite in the bunch, like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears, is someone who rushes into a quarrel not their own. Not a good idea, by the way, grabbing a stray dog by the ears. I wonder if this random pit bull is kind and friendly. Let me just yank on the ears a little bit and see what happens. He says, that's what it's like when you feel like you've got to jump into a quarrel that isn't even your own. And sometimes we do that with people we don't know. But the reality is, a lot of times it can happen in our close relationships, within families, within churches, within businesses. And in counseling circles, this is sometimes described as triangling. What they mean by that is person A has a problem with person B. But instead of person A talking to person B, they go to person C to talk about and try to get them to talk with person B, right? So the teenage son who's having conflict with the mother doesn't talk with the mother, they go to the father. Can you talk to mother about this issue? And the father, thinking he's doing something good, is like, I got this. I'm going to get in the middle of this. And so he goes. And we see this kind of triangling in relationships all the time, which is why you may remember in Matthew 18, Jesus says, hey, if you've got a problem with someone, here's the first thing you do. You talk with the person with whom you've got the problem. And then if that doesn't work, then maybe you get someone wise to help the two of you talk together. That you get out of the triangling. Can you talk with mom? Well, what did she say when you talked with her? Well, I haven't talked with her. Well, that's probably the first thing you need to do. I'm not getting in the middle of this triangle. There is healthy mediation. That can be a good thing. And those are usually people who are not connected to the problem. So there can be healthy mediation in conflicts by a mediator, by a counselor, by a trusted mentor. But there is a big difference between healthy mediation and meddling that just turns into a mess. So let's look at the other side of this. Because Proverbs talks about those who escalate problems, but it keeps giving the flip side, those who de-escalate the problem. Like a gentle answer turns away wrath. The wise turn away anger. These are those times when we realize we don't have to match anger for anger. In the face of their anger, we can be calm and we can be kind instead of going back at them in kind. We don't have to get personal. Or this one, the one who is patient calms a quarrel. We take a deep breath and we take our time before hitting reply on that text or email or tweet. I should probably sleep on this. I should probably gather some facts. Maybe I should have someone read this first. Maybe I should listen before I speak. Or this one, it is to one's honor to avoid strife. Now, not every fight or especially conversation, quarrels should be avoided. Conflict can be healthy if it's handled correctly. So not everything has to just be buried. That's not the idea. What this is reminding us is not everything is worthy of a fight. We don't have to fight about everything. Some things just don't matter. They're not worth it. It doesn't make you a coward or a doormat to refrain from fighting on every instance. Sometimes it shows the strength of your character. And so Proverbs has some alternatives. And one of them is to let go of your need to get even. Do not say, I will do to others as they've done to me. I will pay them back for what they've done. Do not say, I'll pay you back for this wrong. Wait for the Lord, and He will avenge you. an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, Jesus says, you know, that doesn't work. That's not kingdom living. God is going to work out the justice and the vengeance in the end. God is the ultimate avenger. And so we join God in His work for justice, but we leave the vengeance in God's hands. And what we also start to realize is when we are holding on to all that anger and desire to get even, the vengeance, in the end, all of that toxicity starts to ultimately hurt us far more than it's hurting the other person. And in fact, Proverbs goes even further, and it echoes the words of Jesus after He too urges us to not only move away from the eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth kind of vengeance. In fact, it says we've got to replace troublemaking with peacemaking and actively work to replace hate with love. Hatred stirs up conflict, but love covers over all wrongs. Now, some of you may be asking, what's love got to do with it? What's love but a secondhand emotion? I'm glad you asked that question. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about a choice, not just of how we feel, but of how we act. And sometimes that starts, as we've talked about already, how we treat others often starts with how we see others. When it's people we love, we're more likely to give them the benefit of the doubt, right? We're more likely to be patient. When there is someone, on the other hand, that we have already had a problem with, or we think poorly of, or we've had run-ins with the past, or we already see as kind of lesser than us, then we start to make assumptions and we jump to conclusions and we've got a short fuse and a quick trigger. When you assume the worst about people, guess what? That's what you see. You see the worst in people. When you look for faults, that's what you see. You start to see faults. And couples that are in a bad way in their marriage, that's what starts to creep up. The more they're frustrated, the more they see the faults, and the more they see the faults, the more they get frustrated. And that's what happens when people get crossways at work or in business or at church. The more we're frustrated with people, the more we see their faults, and the more we look for the faults and see the faults, the more frustrated we become. And so love becomes much more than a feeling. How do I feel about this person? It remains a choice of how we behave and how we choose to see others. That even in our anger, we choose love. We choose to see them through the lens of love, because we know, as Proverbs says, it covers over all manner of wrongs. So if your enemies are hungry, you actually act in love. You give them bread to eat. And if they are thirsty, give them water to drink, for you will heap coals of fire on their heads, and the Lord will reward you. I'm reminded of a story I read not all that long ago about a son who came to his father, was being bullied by a bigger kid. And the father himself had been bullied as a kid, and you know the kind of reaction that wells up in you as a parent if someone is doing something hurtful toward your kid, and you want to take care of it, and there's a lot of anger that bubbles up. But he decided to go against his initial instinct and try something else. Instead of bullying the bully, and just continuing the cycle, he talked with the kid. And he listened. And he learned, and it's the bigger kid on the back, that he was being bullied. So the father tried something else. He took the kid under his wing. Now his son with the bully became his son with a friend. And the father, instead of continuing the cycle, breaks the cycle and becomes a mentor to this young boy in the process. That didn't just bring peace in the moment of that situation, but it brought healing that is going to carry on for a long time because, as Proverbs says, love covers over all manner of wrongs. Fires of forgiveness swept over this young boy in a purifying way. And friendship was formed, and anger gave way to peace. And so the question that carries us out this morning is this: what direction will you take when anger is in the air and when anger is in your heart? What kind of person will you be? Will you be the kind of person that makes things better? Or will you be the kind of person that makes things worse? We know what Jesus calls us to be.